You are now checked in to Stand Up New York Labs. Oh, yeah.
Hi, sexy podcast. It's another episode, my friends.
All right. I promise 3 minutes of guaranteed no sound effects and genuine, authentic feelings. Okay, this is real time. I've missed you. Thank you so much for coming back to me. I knew you would, but I knew sometimes it feels like, you know, you might give it, you know, not. But here you are with me. And guess who else is with me? The fucking creator of Bust Fucking Magazine. What's that? Cool Credit. Also a writer. She produces a show at UCB East. Put your fucking everything together. Your heart, your soul. Clap them like two hands for Marcel Karp. Yes. Oh, this is where this comes in. Mm-hmm. Marcel Karp right here in the podcast factory. We gonna get really real. Marcel, you wrote me and said that you've been listening to the podcast.
Yeah, I listen to a lot of podcasts because okay. I have a lot of time on my hands.
I'm just interested in the fact that you support this one. I mean, that's not true. Wait, you know, if you could just edit responses to things, it would be great, right? If you could just be like, I'm only interested in me, though. Like, what kind of fucking response is that to someone saying, I listen to a lot of podcasts? Who knows? Personality is getting reckless.
I should caveat that. I listen to podcasts that have women running, you know, doing the podcast. So I saw that you were doing it. So I'm like, oh, I should listen to her podcast. And then I listened to when Nikki Glaser was doing We Know Nothing. I was listening to that a lot. And then also I listened to like my friends who do their podcasts, you know.
Cool. And so then I guess this has been forever. You've been, feminist, which you said, I want to talk about the F word. It's funny that, I mean, I'm interested in talking about it with you too, because right now it seems like it is kind of, when you say the F word, we know why. It's because there's sort of like a negative vibe or negative connotation to being a feminist. What is a feminist to you?
To be a feminist is to understand that men and women are of equal value.
Yes.
That is the definition of feminism.
Yes.
And then there's all these things that come off of that. And but if you start with, there's a person in this room doing the podcast that's male, and there's a woman, and there's a woman that's female, and both of them have equal value, you know, that is feminism right there.
Yeah. Well, and then I think within this analogy, there is the complication of so if there's a man doing a podcast over there and I'm doing my podcast over here, and that man has a stronger podcast, there is the complication, and I think the uncoolness comes from me having my podcast, which is this is a totally wild analogy, okay? Accusing, like using under the guise of feminism, using feminism as a crutch, which can happen within the queer movement. It can happen. It happens anytime someone wants to have an excuse, they'll make an excuse, and sometimes they'll use your brand. And that's something to me that's become frustrating, whether it's in gay rights or women's rights. It's putting blame on something that you can actually transcend if you just put that amount of energy into your work.
Yeah.
But, you must be frustrated as well with it.
Well, I want to go back to why would you even say a stronger podcast? Or do you mean like a bigger following?
What I'm thinking about is I'm in the comedy community. Comedy community, for instance, Jerry Seinfeld's web series is one just like broader example to not get specific, right? Jerry Seinfeld's web series doesn't have a lot of women on it. And it came under, it got heat for not having enough like diversity within. But to me, Jerry Seinfeld's web series is like this podcast. And it so happens that I have just a lot of women on my podcast, not exclusively women. Sometimes I'll let a man in. If they're good. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? If the men behave themselves.
Oh my God, your sound effects are so funny.
I mean, that was on point. They can get reckless. But what I'm saying is that distracts. To me, that distracts from what the goals that we really want. You know, when someone lumps in, you know, the casting in someone's own project, Jerry Seinfeld's project. You know, it would be different if, like, The Tonight Show, I think, only booked male comics. But I think there's just the same way it's a detriment for women like Kelly Cuoco, who I have a joke about now, who how she said, you know, I'm not a feminist because I like raising my children and being a housewife. And I was on, like, the joke that I'm the first punchline is just that, you know, that's ridiculous. All we want is, as feminists, is equality. That's like being like world peace. I mean, I would be for it. I love pizza. It's like completely unrelated. You can do both. I think that there's people on the right and left, as there, I guess, with every movement, there's people distracting who have these extreme views. For instance, someone like her who feels the need to stand up, you know, on a on her Red Book magazine pedestal and say, like, well, ladies, the new feminist, you know, if you really want to be a real woman, you're just, I'm not a fem, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's so, there's a couple of things. I love that you're using the stage and your voice to talk about the feminism.
Yeah.
And I said the feminism.
The
like
feminism.
The
feminism.
What is wrong with me? It's important for men and women to talk about these politics on stage.
Yeah.
It's great. And I love any comic that gets up there and talks about it. It's awesome. I can't stand very famous people like Kaley Coco, who has an opportunity to affect change, who denies that feminism exists. And, you know, I'm 51, so I've been watching this for a very, very long time. Yeah.
I made it.
You made it.
We did a very stretched out high five for 51.
Because we're both tiny women.
Tiny little lady.
In body stature. Not
the tiniest Russian doll.
But you know, so for most of my life, I've watched women separate themselves from feminism. But, you know, Kaley Cuoco knows that she got to be famous because somebody gave her a chance that, you know, considered her of value, of equal value to be that part in The Big Bang Theory. Like, what is she talking about?
Yeah.
I when I was in 2004, I was sort of at home almost full time because I couldn't get work and I was writing, you know, a lot. And I wanted to write a book about reclaiming housewifery because I thought at the time I was spending all this time in the baby park. Now I have a 14-year-old daughter.
I like the word housewifery.
But at the time she was four and I was in the playground almost
that
all day.
That was your world.
And yeah, and I was watching the world around me and I was, until I became a parent, I had no idea the value. I didn't have a realistic idea of the value of what it meant to raise children and be a housewife. And a housewife does a lot of work. You know, to be home full time while a partner is out earning money, it's a huge fucking job. And I'd be in the playground with nannies and other women who were housewives. And I considered myself a housewife. And 2004, I was already on my own raising my daughter Ruby.
Yeah.
So
Ruby Carp, also a comic.
Comic, hopefully.
Her show, it's you guys that have the show. It's Hello Giggles.
Well, yeah, Hello UCB's. Giggles is a just website. Just a quick detour.
No, it's just a quick little thing for like for the brains to click on and be like, oh, that's a show I'll go to.
That's something you should all come to. Well, Hello Giggles is a website started by Zooey Deschanel, Molly McAleer, and Sophia Rossi, and they started in 2011, and they created this platform for women to you know, be created for women, written by women, and, you know, service women and also men. But, you know, at the onset, it was, you know, women were writing and Ruby was asked to be a writer. She was, you know, 10 at the time. They wanted to create like a teen Giggles or Giggles Youth or, you know, something to like address the inner girl because we all have them. But they wanted the actual girls to speak from the lines.
Much better.
And so Rube started writing and then she went to a Hello Giggles show in L.A.
When she started writing, were you, you must have been kind of like, you must have been like, fuck yes.
I was like
Me 2.0. Were you excited? Were you worried?
What's happening here? No, I was really excited for her because she... Again, this is like the age of the millennial or the pre post-millennial. You know, she had been on YouTube since she was seven. She had done this interview with Amy Poehler, Smart Girls at the Party. She talked about being a feminist at the age of seven.
Cool.
And then she had a YouTube channel, and then she, like, snuck herself onto Tumblr. Like, so she was already doing stuff that was
She
uber
was an
creative.
Early adapter at, like, a very early age.
Early adapter. And so we were in L.A. I was on a shoot. At the time, I was working at Fuse, and I was doing a shoot with the Foo Fighters, so I brought her out with me because, again, I'm raising her on my own. It was always hard to, like, find some place to put her, so I would just take her, and I would schedule shoots that ran
along
the
weekend.
And
she was a smartie, and she would see it as an opportunity.
And she was just like, I'm hanging with my mom, ordering room service.
Yeah.
Like, that was the best. And then, sorry, I did knock the thing. Sorry, I saw it happen.
I
and
needed
then
to put it back.
I did. I'm so sorry.
We're referencing a microphone now.
And she went, okay, the Hello Giggles had their first show at UCB, and I asked if she could do a set, and they were like, sure, that's okay. Like, they had no idea. And then she went, she killed. It was great. Lena Dunham was on the line of Aaron Foster.
Oh, my God, cool.
Zoe was there. It was, like, awesome. And then they asked me if I would approach UCB and see if we could do a show here. And so I did, and they said yes, which, like, a miracle. And the first year and a half we were doing the show, it was literally storytelling, and my daughter, you know, always the host. And then I bumped into Wyatt Cenac, and I had asked him, like, how do you get people to say yes? How do you get comics to say yes? How do you turn this into something that, like, will bring an audience and serve women?
Yeah.
And he gave me, like, all this great advice. And then I started, so, like, a year and a half ago, I started turning this into more of a stand-up show. And I always try to book, like, four women and a guy. Sometimes I have two guys. I try to make the lineup, like, you know, warm and welcoming, so the audience feels mm-hmm. warm. And I think a lot about the lineup. I think about the women on stage. I think about their voices. And I try to put together a show that's going to bring, like, a really nice hour for an audience. So that's the Hello Giggles portion of my life.
Cool, man.
Long-winded way of saying
hi. It is a good
hi.
Hour. It is a good hour. And you should check it out if you're in New York City.
Please
but
come.
I want to get back to...
Oh, yeah, to feminism.
Yeah, where were we in the feminist...
So we were talking about the definition of feminism and, you know, celebrities coming out
celebrities
and
coming
denying
out. Yeah, yeah.
That they're feminists. And, you know, like, I'll say something very old school. It's a Shonda. When women, you know,
Shonda Rhimes.
Shonda is a in Yiddish.
Shonda,
Shonda.
I'm writing that down.
It's like, come on, sir, don't do that. It's a Shonda when women come up and say, "Well, I'm not really a feminist." Well, you know what? You are pushing
yeah.
the envelope. Like Kaylee Cuoco, hello, you are the lead woman on an all boy cast show, and you're kicking ass
yeah.
every day. Like, you don't think, like, 15-year-old girls or, you know, 20-year-old girls who, like, boys don't look at aren't looking up at you
yeah.
and going, "Shit, yeah, I want to be like her. I want to hold my own with these, like, nerd boys." Like,
yeah.
Fuck that.
Totally. Shonda, you, Kelly Cuoco. Did you say Shonda, you?
You're a Shonda.
You're a Shonda.
You're a Shonda.
Anyone else Shondaing? Anyone else on the Shonda list?
Oh, there's so many. But, you know, I won't call them out unless you bring it up.
Okay, but mouth their words. Mouth their names. Guys, did you write a book?
Oh, I've written two books. I'm in the middle of writing another one. I'm always in the middle of writing that one.
So is that a part of being an author of a book? Because I was going to say, how do you write a book? What would you say to someone?
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. So I co-founded Bust magazine with Debbie Stoller, who's still the editor of the magazine. I left in 2001, but from 93 to 2001, I was I founded the magazine with her, and we were editing. And we at some point we were approached to do some kind of write, like, some feminist tome,
mm-hmm.
and we decided that because when we had, I don't know what they're doing now business wise, but in the time that I was there, we asked for submissions from readers. So all that whole content, all of those magazines were written by women who read the magazines, and sometimes a dude. So we decided to create an anthology that was based on the writings of these women, and we would write, like, some feminist intro, you know, like our point of view on whatever the chapter was. And I think that book came out in the late 90s.
That's interesting. When you were saying piecing together, I feel like your editor mind, when you were talking about booking the show, it's your editor mind again of seeing the way everything comes together.
Yeah, it's cool. Like I'm telling a story. I'm helping Hello Giggles tell a story, and that's serving an audience. You know, so I mean, and my professional background, I did promos to help pay for the bills like my whole life, and then I became a creative director, and now I just, you know, because I'm a little older and more established now, I work on the management side. But I always think about like design and how something looks, and you know, I always try to take a group photo and then I play with it till it looks like, till everyone looks nice. You know, like I think about things very visually, and it's like literally like my background. Yeah. Cool. Oh yeah, so how do you write a book? So you, and then I did a knitting book with my friend Pauline in 2009 or 10, like one of those years.
One of those ones.
Well, the other thing about as you age, like the years start to mush together.
I just never know the year of anything. Yeah, like, I didn't know the year that I got married 2.5 years ago, and I just didn't, I like couldn't think of the year that I got married, because also some people are like, oh, this winter is like this, but last winter was like that. I'm like, how do you know about all the winters? That isn't life just mishmashing
it
together?
Mishes. Someone's like, when was the first time you saw Bikini Kill? And I'm always like, fuck, do you mean the decade or the month?
The infamous murderer, like, Bikini.
Probably in the mid-90s. Like, I was looking at some photos that had been taken at a fashion show that I did for Built by Wendy. Like, she asked all of her female friends to be her models.
Oh, cool.
And there was a band on stage, and I can't remember. Like, I literally can't remember if it was Joan Jett and Kathleen, or was it just Kathleen, or was it, you know, like, I can't. You know what I mean? Like, I know who was in the room, but I don't know who was doing the singing.
No. Yeah. I mean, but what about names and faces? That's also...
They were all there. Like, I, you know...
They're there?
Yeah. You know, like, I remember Kathleen being in the room, and I remember Joan Jett, but I don't... And I have a super... Because, you know, I take blurry photos almost exclusively.
I mean, you've had lots of celebs in your life.
Yeah.
How is it to have lots of celebs in your life?
Well, the funny thing is, like, you don't... and you know this because you're around... people who are now famous or becoming famous. Like,
yeah.
You don't really, at the end of the day, as they say on Hip Hop and Love on the VH1, yeah, at the end of the day, you're all doing the same thing. You're waking up, you're eating breakfast, you're going home.
Yeah, there's still Shondas out there.
You know, like, you're still having your opinions. And whether you're famous or not, you still have to be a person. And you connect on the level of personhood. So I had... you know, and I've heard you talk about this, like when you make friends and then you meet people, like the people you make friends with are the people that you connect with on a like a precious and ever more kind of level.
Yeah.
And then the people you meet are the ones where you have to be nice and say thank you and please, oh my God, it's so great to see you, and just constantly give them your attention.
Yeah.
Both camps, people are still people. And if they're famous or not famous, if they're influential in a public sphere or influential on a private sphere, they're still people.
Okay, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Peeps are still peeps.
Peeps are still peeps.
I think it deserves this.
And most of my friends...
People.
Are still peeps. Most of my friends are feminists.
Are they?
Yeah.
What's your cool... I just feel like your life is so cool. You live around the corner from the studio in the Upper West Side. You've got a cool daughter who's doing stand-up. You've had like a really cool, important legacy of a life. And you continue to like be inspired and do things. I think you're super rad.
Well, I was watching Madonna last night on Fallon. And
we played that on the last episode.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Madonna stand-up.
I was like, bitch, you're doing great. Like, she's showing what it's like to be in your 50s. Like, you don't have to be, you know, like lamenting the legacy of aging. Like, look, I mean, other than, oh, sorry, I'm so sorry. Other than what's happening with her face. Like, you know, she's just like.
In terms of the work.
Her physicality on that stage and her work and like the way her mind is thinking. Like, I don't think, and this is something that's really also important in feminism. You're not given a script as to how you're going to feel at every juncture in your life. Like, when in my 20s, I was angry and I was agitating for change and, oh my God, I'm so happy I started Bust.
Yeah.
And in my 30s, I got knocked up and I like looked at life very differently because I gave life to a girl child, and I had to
girl child.
I made a deliberate decision to scale back the anger and the activism and focus more inward, and then, you know, you get to your 40s and there's, I don't care if you're a feminist or not, like, you do not look in the mirror and go, you find things in the mirror that confuse you or make you unhappy. And in your 40s, that really bubbles to the front because you're aging in a way that no one told you that you were going to age this way, kind of thing.
Age is such an interesting thing because people have, I mean, first of all, the hilarious thing, I'm turning 30.
Yay!
Actually, I might be 30 by the time this airs. Oh. April 19th is my birthday. We had to record this early because we're both flying via helicopter to the Bahamas where
That's
there is
right.
no equipment
we're
right
going.
After this.
We're going.
But people have these like, you know, 30 is going to be tough, but 32 is when things really shape up. I mean, 35 is the best year though. And then 40, it sort of dips. And it's like, life is so subjective.
Yeah.
And it often, my mom said a really cool thing to me once when I was younger, which was, bitch, grow up! but then the second coolest thing she said to me, I started doing stand-up young, like Ruby, and I said, I think I was turning 20, and I was like, you know, I think I'm going to have a really hard time getting older because I like, you know, a lot of lineups, like the youngest girl to the youngest, the young, and you sort of see that as a currency. And I said, I think I'm going to have a hard time getting older, and my mom's like, oh, yeah, you will.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? And she was like, yeah, I mean, if you're already planning on having a hard time now, then of course you're going to, yeah, like it's all in your mind, really. Like
it is. And
there's mortality, which counters what I'm saying. Because first, I think, but dealing with it logically, why put more stress on yourself? Why have this sort of like, you know, constant, like, why should we always have this vibe of like, oh, another year? It's like, what are you talking about? Just be happy with what you're doing now.
Yeah, you have to be in the moment. You can't, again, like, you can't be like, well, I'm 51 now, it's really all down. No, it's not downhill. It actually gets even better because now I'm thinking in bigger blocks than I did when I was 30. I'm thinking, oh, well, you know, 67, there's got to be this. And,
you're more self-aware. What serves you.
I'm casting a net that is very future-based, whereas when I was in my 20s, I was casting a net that was very much like, here it is right now. I need to be paid for what I'm need to be paid for what I'm worth. I need to be paid for my skill level. I need to be seen as a person. I need to not be objectified. All of those things were really important for me. They still are. I'm fighting it in a different way.
Interesting. I like that one.
I mean, you know, you I love
you're more so it's more you said no wait, you were gonna say something about me and I'm gonna let you.
Well, you're awesome.
I thought, okay, yeah, no, you weren't going to say something about me. You were talking in general. I got desperate and was like, here, she's about to give me a compliment.
Well, I love you so much. I was such a huge fan of yours.
I forced you into this.
No,
we got to get back.
You didn't.
We got to get back to here in a better time. But you were talking, you were saying, who knows? How can we find
words? Well, you know, again, when we go back to being a feminist, you have to, if you start from the place where we are of equal value, of the genders of being of equal value. Mm-hmm. It just allows you to write the script of how you want to live the life with that as the construct, as the foundation. Mm-hmm. And I think if most of us can look at it that way, you know, we'll be better off long term, immediately as well as long term. I love that I live in New York and that I can walk into a corporate office and I can like stand my ground and fight for what I want. But
yeah.
I know that not
long distance high five again.
This time I stood up and I lost my balance. But I don't know that every other woman has that opportunity. I was so happy that Sarah Silverman
put out that video. Yeah, it was perfect.
And it's like, you know, I want to even ratchet it up a bit. I think it's beyond you deserve. You need to own that you have the right to earn what the male person next to you is earning. You know, you need to fight for your where you are in your skill set and what the job is and the salary you need to live. I have seen.
And I guess, I mean, in this point, I think to serve, to be moderate enough to gain the membership of casting a wider net, do you need to? No. I think that the word deserve, I mean, for a savvy woman, yeah, I mean, like, if you're sitting here and I'm going to give you a keynote, there's a lot of things you need to do. But the deserving leaves it open. Like, you deserve to make, if you're a woman that's like, for whatever reason, I mean, obviously between the two of us, we're thinking, okay, here's this woman, who's a woman that's in the same scenario where the man's making more and she feels completely okay with it? truly. Not, I mean, like, it's probably not a, yeah, so.
No, and I think there are scripts for own, for asking for what you deserve or what you are, what you have the right to earn. And it's, it really is, when I was, I had a job before the job I have now where I was running a group of like 30 people and had a lot of women on my staff. And I would say to them, you must always stay away from, I'm raising a kid on my own. You must always talk about the competitive rate industry standard that you need to be making, what the competitive rate is in the industry standard.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And I was like, this is the script you need.
So what was it, the competitive rate?
And, as per the industry standard. That is the script you need to walk into your manager's office to demand the salary you're looking for, the salary that your counterpart is making. And then I would have men come into my office asking for raises, and they would have like their bullet points, you know, like, well, it's because, and they would step all over their cocks, and you'd be like, dude, like, fuck you.
What,
like,
do you mean?
Like, you know, it,
so they would be stepping all over their cocks, and how do men do better?
They didn't do better.
No, but I mean, like, how can we help men do better too?
It goes back to the script. You need to be making what the competitive rate is as per the industry standard. So,
but isn't it also boasting about who, like, what you bring?
Yeah, it's skill set. Yeah. So, you know, it's different in the stand-up world because everybody is looking for, everybody deserves the same rate. The same rate for the 10 minutes that the next person is getting.
But not actually, because, but you know, again, when it comes to corporates or colleges or whatever, I'm happy to say that I charge more now than I did 5 years ago, and I think it's deserved.
Yeah, because again, it's, you're on a trajectory, and in a corporate America, it's the same thing. When you start as a coordinator, the industry standard, and I'm making this up, is $50,000, and when you advance to a manager, the industry standard starts at $80,000, and when you know what I mean, it's interesting. And so you're on the same trajectory. You started as a baby comic,
a little baby,
and now you're here, and then you're going to be here, and then you're going to be here, and you should be getting top dollar when you're there, when you're headlining or doing whatever. And I know you are already headlining.
Because I'm really interested in this, the script, the dialogue, I think inherently women, and when I say women and men, I understand that gender is fluid and that, like, I grew a fucking beard and I have a wife. So, like, clearly I've got a little bit of testosterone in my life. I feel like if I was Doritos, I'd be like, you know how they have hint of lime Tostitos and Doritos? I'd be like, hint of man. Just a hint of man.
Just a hint of male.
The idea of appeal or coming to the table with something true and vulnerable and emotional is a currency. For me, for someone to tell me that they're raising, I mean, outside of the business world and what we know about what works in business, of course, like someone telling me, you know what, I can't make your show because I'm, you know, I've got my daughter today and I can't, you know, it's impossible. That is something that speaks to me as a woman, but it doesn't, within the male, also the male constructed work environment, that doesn't have any currency. And in general, when it comes to work, I mean, I'm interested too in the idea of both men and women's positives coming together to form like the best ideas and the best models within business, within everything, you know?
I agree. And you know, again, corporate world is much different than creative world. Creative world, it's, you know, again, if you have a comic that's doing your show, she can't make it because it's emotional,
yeah,
and it's totally different. Corporate world, it changes. And again, like, I had a lot of women on my staff, and if they had to leave early, they left early. Like, I wasn't making them stay to finish, like, a stupid design on a print ad.
Yeah.
Like, fuck that shit. Go take care of your family. Because if you're not taking care of your family, you're not being productive in the office. But not every manager thinks that way. I've worked for many people, both genders, that, you know, were like, no, you're staying here till 11 till the work gets done. And I knew that that wasn't the manager I was going to be.
Yeah, but like, you don't want to work for people that treat you like shit.
No, you don't. And you know, we live in New York, so for us, like, we have to compromise all the time because we need the paycheck, as opposed to like going, fuck that shit, I'm walking out. So there's
and
a lot
so
of
competitive that any way that you give yourself an edge, Even if it's never picking your kid up from school.
Yeah, and your kid is like always alive. Like my mom was a cashier at a fast food restaurant in the 70s. She was never on time to pick me up at the schoolyard. I was always the last kid there. And then I had to like walk home because like I'd be the last kid there. And like,
I guess the party's over.
And I'd have to walk home because she couldn't get, and she had, she was a cashier at a fast food restaurant for most of my childhood.
Oh, cool. Where'd you grow up?
Queens. First in Corona, and then when I was going into high school, we moved to a place called Hillcrest, which was right near St. John's University.
I lived on a street called Hillcrest.
Oh.
We the same
world.
Person.
Small world.
Okay, so, yeah, cool. So I feel like we've given some good advice here.
Yeah.
Script is talking about the competitive rate as per the industry standard.
So, and you know, don't overinflate what your worth is. Don't underinflate what your worth is. If you have, if you're just out of college, you're going to be starting at the bottom and getting yourself to the top. And it's a fast trajectory if you are working your ass off. Like if you're 22, you finish school, you're going in as a coordinator because you have a lot to learn and no matter what the industry is. When you get to be a little older and you know you've proved your mettle, the things start to come your way.
Yeah.
And there is a glass ceiling and there's like no way around it. Like there's a glass ceiling. Your eyes have to be open about the glass ceiling and figure out how to get through it.
How to smash through it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think that that's the thing is oftentimes we, like, talk so much about what the – and I think that I may have talked about this a few episodes ago, but you know what? You're going to hear it again. There is only so much that you can – in. You've got to know the board game that you're playing on.
Yeah.
You've got to identify the obstacles so that you can jump over them. But – identifying the obstacles, pointing out that there's an issue with the obstacle. First of all, it's much better if you do that in terms of when you're more accomplished, because if you jumped over the hurdle, then you can say, hey, I jumped over that hurdle and it exists, like Sarah Silverman did. I think that the frustration is sometimes with some in comedy there, and it's so subjective that everyone that works in comedy deep down inside feels like they may have been ripped off or they may have lost their chance or they could, you know, everyone's got it a little better and that guy's a little luckier and that guy's got this. But when there are comics that haven't been doing it long posting, you know, kind of riot type statuses about the lack of women on this lineup or that lineup, I feel like it does a disservice rather than a service.
Yeah.
So again, it's what you were saying about, yeah, knowing that there's a glass ceiling, but like, yeah, we treating it like, how do I get around this? And yeah, of course, being vocal about it. I feel like I'm talking about feminism on stage right now, and I feel like I'm doing the Kelly Cuoco thing, so people know my perspective. But I guess I just need to keep on developing the bit, because the way that I truly feel is, I think in a lot, I mean, like, I think because I grew up Muslim. Thanks for asking. But I think because I grew up with a big Muslim family, so not Muslim, like Muslim, but like Muslish. Back to that old format. but so I grew up Muslish, and I had this family that I can see their perspective. They've just got this different perspective. And for me to try to push something on them, to push my ideas of what it is to be a woman, it would never work. It would never work. So I need to, or being gay, it's like, I know that the only way to like have understanding and peace is sometimes to just fucking understand something that you don't, you know, like just, anyway.
To keep unpacking this joke.
What I rate this ramble.
No, it was a good ramble because this joke that you're working on, you have to keep unpacking it until you get to what you're trying to say. And it's a lot of work because you're juggling a bunch of stuff. You don't agree with what she's saying, but you don't want to be, tearing her down.
It's completely fine to be a house. I mean, like, yeah, one thing that I have been saying, I'm eating your biscotti now.
I'm glad you're eating. I brought it
myself
for you.
From the bad ramble. Thank you very much.
This is the leftover housewife.
We're also
within our bunny
ears.
The
housewife, the leftover housewife, also brought bunny ears. So the whole time that we've been unpacking the world, we've been packing ears.
Because we're reclaiming. We're reclaiming being sexy. And again, because I grew up in this era, Gloria Steinem with the bunny ears was so much a part of the 70s for me, because that was when my father was like teaching me about this stuff. Like, you need to be more than this. You need to be that.
So your dad was the sort of the lead, I mean,
he was the one agitating for change inside his home, basically. You know,
you're gonna say agitating me.
Because he was, you know, he was a taxi driver, so he's in the world and he was talking to people all day, and he would meet women, and when he, I think he had Gloria Steinem in his taxi, and he came one day in the 70s, and he came home and he said, "Mass, I met the most amazing woman. We need to talk about her," because he's Jewish and speaks Yiddish also, and he was like, "She's a feminist, and we're gonna learn about feminism together." And blah 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 blah. I was in sixth grade.
What a cool guy!
Yeah, because my mother was off the boat from Israel and was just trying to learn how to speak English, basically, you know, like for most of my childhood. So I was the eldest of two, and I was the, you know, I was the one who was in the, they used to call this IGC, but now it's what would be considered the G&T classes. I was the one put in the, like, smart kids class in the public school. And so my dad like sort of went, all right, this is the one.
Yeah.
We're going to focus on the chick, and the chick is the one that's going to like do shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So, all right. So you've lived in New York. I mean, do you think that the fact that you've achieved so much has to do you think no matter where you lived in the world, you would have come to New York? You would have sought it, like, you know?
It's a really fun exercise in, like, what would my life have been if I hadn't finished, you know, barely finished college and gone to work at Showtime, met a man named Herb Scannell, who brought me over to Nickelodeon, where I met Debbie Stoller, where we started talking about feminism, and where we started Bust.
Like, I like what these lily pads.
You know what I mean? Like, these are the things that led me to starting Bust in 1993. So everything outside of
in
that...
In 1993, too, was starting a magazine, a thing that people were doing, like...
Well, you know, we were so...
Was it like having an app?
It was like having an app today, like creating an app. Like creating an app, being a tech kid, creating an app, as opposed to like playing, downloading one. Like, it really was that, but at the same time, like... We in the early 90s, people in their 20s were making zines. And so we were one of the two girls making zines. We had gone into this zine store called See Here on East 7th Street, run by this guy named Ted. And we walked into this, like, it was probably as big as this room here. And it was wall-to-wall zines, you know, Xerox stapled, no magazines. There was no Cosmo in this place. It was just zines. And we were like, holy shit, we can do this. Like, we didn't think about becoming Cosmo until the Cosmos came after us. Like, we were just like, let's do what these guys are doing. And, you know, around that time, like, Kathleen had put out her zine, and Fact Sheet 5 had put out theirs, and I think Ben is Dead was sort of on the way out. Like, people were doing shit. Like, people were doing shit, and we were like, we could be doing shit too. Like, we were obsessed with Sassy.
The idea of being sassy?
No, the magazine Sassy started by Jane Pratt. No, it's like, it's a long time ago. Like, you weren't even born, probably.
I just like the idea of you guys being obsessed with the attitude of being sassy. You'd like start your morning and be like, girl! Snapping each other's faces.
Like, you know, Debbie and I could have become girlfriends and, you know, had a relationship and then broken up, never talked to again. But we became friends and we
were you guys attracted to each other?
I could have been with her in a second. She was gorgeous and also brilliant, like beyond being... Yes, right.
Shout out for the girl crush that I never thought that I'd even find out about. So, like, you had a crush. Wait, are you, how do you identify yourself?
I identify as like somebody just.
Show me your papers.
Somebody just come fuck me already. That's how I identify myself.
Yes.
So it was really easy for us.
I identify as somebody come fuck me already.
Yeah, that's well, what you can do. But in that at that time, we would just like read these like Xerox and stapled magazines of people's words, and we were like, we can do this. And then I went to Paris, and I came back after a few months, and I called her up, and I was like, did you do anything with that idea that we had a few months ago, the thing that we talked about in Tompkins Square Park called Bust? And she's like, no, I didn't do anything. And I was like, let's fucking get on it, because I've got nothing to do. I don't have any work.
Fresh back from Paris.
You're still at Nickelodeon. And we just like, I literally lived in her apartment for weeks on end putting this scene together. She was very much ahead of the curve when it came to technology. She already had an AOL address called bust@AOL.com. I don't know if she still has it. And we put it on the back of our zine. We did our manifesto. I will, if anybody wants to see what the first 18 issues of Bust were like during my tenure, send me an email, and I will send you the Dropbox link. I will send
you.
Do
you really want to give your email out, maybe?
Oh, I have an email address.
What is it?
You don't have this one. This is the other one. But okay. Marcel Karp at Yahoo. Anybody can email me and I'll send you the Dropbox.
All the Yahoos, go to Marcel Karp at Yahoo and you can get OG Bust issues. Cool.
The old issues. And, you know, it was just like, when I think about this time in my life, we were just like on autopilot. We were like, we are fucking doing this. And at the time I was going out every night. Like, you know, I was going to the Comedy Cellar. I was hanging out with some people at the Comedy Cellar. I was doing this. I was doing that. I was just having the time of my life because I didn't have any responsibilities. I just got to wake up, smoke, go to work, come back. Maybe sometimes I wasn't working, but like I was just fucking
just like
living
free
it.
Life, just living in New
in my
York.
20s, getting laid,
and like,
you know,
forming a very important magazine.
Yeah,
I mean, what do you accredit the success of the magazine?
I think that you know, and I only can speak about the 7 years that I was there, because I was telling Alana and Abby that their issue was the first issue I had purchased ever in the 20-something years that Bust existed, because,
whoa,
like, I never had to purchase it when I was the co-editor, and yeah, then I never looked at it again after I left. So
was it kind of a bad, it was nuts.
It was a terrible breakup, but
oh,
as
shit.
Breakups go, it was a terrible
shit.
Breakup. But at the same time, it came like at the right time, because I just had this baby. I was in a terrible marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Then my best friend committed suicide. Then I had a tumor in my breast, and then the towers fell. So it came like, it came in like a trajectory of like awfulness. So it was like, if that one thing had happened, I probably would have been in a fetal position for a long time. But because all these other things happened, like in a 6 month period,
wow,
you know, I just threw me off.
You were just like nothing.
I was trying to chill with one thing at a time.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay, I'm finally leaving Bust. Oh, this man that I'm fucking every night, I hate him.
That you were fucking every night?
Oh, he
wanted to, and you didn't.
I've been with a lot of people. All the people I've been with, top three.
Like top three people
to have sex with.
Oh, to have sex with.
Yeah, like,
oh, cool. Like even today.
Like when I think about like top,
whoa,
three, because he was, you know, like 8 or 9 years younger than me. So he had a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And he was beautiful. And you know, the problem was when it was a beautiful boy, they can get away with anything.
Yeah.
If they're fucking you from behind or whatever, like it doesn't matter.
Is he baby daddy?
He's the inseminator. Oh. We call him the inseminator.
The inseminator.
Not to my daughter's face, but
yeah. Okay, cool. So
you know, because I was dealing one thing at a time, and then the suicide just, I think, took me years to recover from. So that was just like a little part of my life that the breakup with Bust was just sort of incidental.
Wowzers.
But at the same time, like doing Bust for those 7 years, it was like amazing, because we, you know, it's like doing this, the Hello Giggle show at UCB East. It's like every woman I meet is as exciting as the last woman I met. Like, oh my God, there are more women. There are more women.
Yeah.
There are more women. Like, so we would write, you know, we would put these issues together four times a year. And, you know, I would meet more interesting women, or more women like me who, like, you know, was trying to figure out how to do this, or trying to, you know, I had, you know, we didn't want to tell women how to give blowjobs, because that's what Cosmo did, but we wanted women to own the blowjobs. Like, you know, so you know, again, when you're in your 20s, you're just trying to figure this shit out. You know, hopefully you've figured out some of it.
Yeah.
By your 30s, and by the time you're in your 50s, you're dealing with the onset of menopause, and that's another ball game. But like, you know, you're just, your life is
Wait, when does menopause come?
you know, I am not even in the zone of it, but I know that it's coming.
But you know it's coming.
Well, because I'm 51, so
do you feel the stir of it coming?
No, not at all.
Okay, so it comes when you're like 60, right?
Well, it comes. No. It, for some women, it comes in their 40s, and some women it comes like right about now. But I'm
menopause.
Right, I'm down to fuck every day.
Whoa.
As they say.
So then, how do you work that out with raising? You know.
Raising a daughter on your own in an apartment.
Yeah,
and
then like trying to get sex every day.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's hard. Yeah. All you fucking bitches that are complaining about like how hard it is to get. Listen, Marcel Karp is getting it done. Are you getting it done?
Well, not recently, but I had this joke. I was lucky enough to ask to be do ASCAT last year when I had turned 50, and I had said that I would have loved to have set up this project where I did 50 fucks in 50 days, and you know, it was just like a fantasy.
Yeah,
didn't happen. But the reality is, when you're raising somebody on your own,
yeah,
there are a lot of things that a woman needs to decide. You need to decide if you want a partner. Can you do this on your own? How important is it to have a partner? What do you want to expose your kid to? And I have no judgment. Oh, sorry. I have no judgment over what anybody does. But
yeah,
for me,
yeah,
because again, before I had her, I could, like you, before you got married, you could walk into a room, go that, let's go. And you'd be gone.
Yeah.
And then
yeah,
3 weeks later, you'd roll out of bed and then there'd just be another one.
Yeah.
And I think.
I mean, I feel like you had a more like fluid, sexy, cool New York time with that. But like, yeah, me
you know,
too.
You know,
me too.
Like, or maybe you would pine for somebody and it would take longer. But, you know, I would go to Brownies or Mercury Lounge or Luna Lounge like every night. And
yeah,
you'd find someone to go home with. Like,
yeah,
it was not.
So now you're
hard.
I mean, do you do Tinder?
No, but I had a friend of mine who really like. Okay, so I was with Ruby's dad for 2 years, and there was a year where he was living here where he would take her for a night, and then that's when I was doing Nerve and,
yeah,
you know, having a really good time.
Doing Nerve?
Yeah. Nerve in 2003 was really easy to do. There was like, it's a dating thing or it was like a sex thing.
Oh, I thought I went through different things. Like, that's when I was on E. And
yeah. Oh, well, I can talk about that ad nauseum.
Yeah, okay.
There are many years where I was on E for like a very long time.
Yes.
But then he went back to Australia and I was like, I can't have a 4-year-old wake up to a hairy butt. My decision. I don't think this is for everybody.
Yeah.
I was okay to be alone. I'd been alone for a very long time. I wasn't afraid to be alone. I knew I could raise her. I knew I could earn money. I knew I could give her good values and put food on the table. I learned how to cook. You know, it was like all these things I could do. So finding a partner never, like, it just went away, like went on the back burner. And when I would have boyfriends or lovers, I kept it private outside of her purview. So I would give her a sleepover and then have somebody come over and then, you know,
word,
send her home and then bring her home. So she's only met like two people that I've had real relationships with in the course of her 14 years. She knows that I go out.
Does that is one thing that you learned about yourself that like those are the kinds of relationships that work best with what your life is, or are you open to longer relationship?
I would love to, I said this to a friend of mine who's going through a divorce. I would love to love and be loved. I would love to be with somebody literally for the rest of my life or for 4 months. Like I would love, like I love being in love. I love being held. Like I'm like any person.
Yeah.
It's not a gender thing. Like I'm like any guy.
I'm just like
a. And I like a good blowjob. I like, you know, like I like all that shit. Like
I like
all that shit. And when I don't have it, I'm, you know, there's the Hitachi magic wand, and that's it's something that I have.
Hitachi.
Say hello to my Hitachi.
When you want
to
get Shonda,
pull out the Honda.
No. Shonda's, isn't it bad when you get to be a bad girl?
Oh, no, that's kind of pathetic, right? Yeah,
it's like pathetic.
That's not how you do it.
I mean, it's a different kind of
Shonda
masturbation when you're feeling really ashamed of yourself.
But I do think for especially girls, like you should masturbate every day. Like,
okay.
If you're in a relationship or not, you should get off every day. It makes.
I'm gonna the same way you did 50 fucks. I'm gonna scale it back by a lot of percent and make it five. For 5 days in a row, I'm gonna masturbate.
Yeah, and you know your wife will. It'll make your marriage even cooler, even cooler than it already is. And I have this fantasy of you being like the happiest married couple ever. But
all smiles here.
You're just like in a good mood when you've orgasm like six
yeah,
times
totally.
In a row.
No, no,
like,
no, it's true.
You know, I have like a half hour where I'm alone and I spend that half hour productively and I'm in the best mood. My kid thinks I'm like the happiest kid in the world, happiest woman in the world. And I'm not without the happy pills.
And how would you see yourself in terms of your happiness? How do you?
I think I'm pretty happy.
Yeah.
You know, I think like if you can survive as many years as I have and, you know, not had a heart attack yet, like you're in good shape.
Yeah, man.
How do you feel about your life?
I feel pretty good, but I was talking to someone about how depression is probably just like sexuality and like gender, like it, to deny that it exists or to sort of, try to run away from it doesn't really make sense. It's just something that like, I live with a certain amount of, and I think everybody does in terms of sometimes you're predisposed the way your body, the way your brain is working and the way to just feel down. And that's, I mean, like now in terms of, I can blame it on my career and my relationships or whatever. I think that there's just a certain amount of my days or where my mind, and maybe it's part of, maybe I think in the balance of having ambition, that's just part of it is sort of feeling that pressure in a way that's like not, you know, leaving you giggling.
Well, you know, the thing about happiness too is like I have a frustrating or depressing thought every day. Like I go through moods because I am inherently lonely, right? You know, I have best friends and I have like very close, I have people I'm very close with, but you know, without a romantic connection, that loneliness is pervasive.
Yeah.
And that exists too, but like moment to moment, I'm okay.
Well, you know? It's again, I guess, like the same thing with glass ceiling, just knowing what your situation is and understanding it and allowing it to be that way. And if you want to make, for me, like, for instance, yesterday, laying around, not doing anything. I wanted to go for a run, didn't go for a run. Wanted to meditate, didn't meditate. And it's just like there's times where you're just not going to want to help yourself out, and that's fine. I mean, like, and at the end of the day, it was a beautiful day. I got to catch up on shows. I had some reading to do. I did that. I did a little bit of writing, but because I didn't hit those goals, I felt, you know, that lagging sort of shittiness.
Yeah, like, oh, I didn't get to the gym today. Oh, I didn't write 10 pages today. Like, you beat yourself up for the things that you didn't accomplish.
But then you just, like, put yourself further in the hole to, like, so then today, luckily, I think I tried to, like, sort of just talk myself through that yesterday, dealing with like the fact that I didn't accomplish what I wanted to accomplish and that tomorrow's going to be the opportunity.
Yeah.
And then I was able to wake up and do the things that I want to do today.
Yeah. I think you can't, like, I watch my kid like put homework off like all week, you know, and it's like, well, don't punish yourself for putting homework off. You are going to get your homework done because Monday's coming.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's not, Monday's not coming because you're ready. It's because it's Monday. It's like that Lauren Michaels quote about 11:30.
Yeah.
You know, it's like
happening.
Monday's coming. So you're going to get your homework done at some point. Like it doesn't have to be right this second.
I mean, cool mom, wise words, Marcel Karp.
I'm like just trying to keep her with the flow and not beat herself up and not feel like she deserves to beat herself up. I feel
like. Yeah, what an important thing also to.
To own what she has and to be, to like do what she wants with it. And I think that's what the kind of an idea that women should have in general, like own what you have and do what you want with it.
Okay, that's going to be the title of this episode. Own what you have, do what you want with it. And imagine that sound effect was more upbeat. Or when's the next Hello Giggles at UCB East?
Our next Hello Giggles, probably when this goes up, will be the day after Mother's Day, May 11th. You should come.
May 11th. Lisa Traeger and I also are doing a show at UCB East May 19th. So you know what? Just park yourself at UCB East. Meditate on the words that Marcel has imparted on you today. And remember, fuck yourself.
Come say hi.
While fucking yourself. Don't
your eyes have to be open about the glass ceiling and figure out how to get through
it. How to smash through it.
Yeah.
And I'll go fooling around and chasing old mistakes. You'll be screaming.